There are three big problems with used vehicle appraisals. One, manually sifting through comp vehicles. Two, old book values and ghost comps. Three, no recon visibility. You can solve them all with AutoVision, now available from Reynolds and Reynolds. Learn more at reyrey.com/usedcars. That's reyrey.com/used-cars.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem.
Welcome to Daily Drive for Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. I'm Jake Neer in Detroit, in for Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Toyota reports record earnings results across the board. Public dealership groups see F&I profits per vehicle decline. And even though CEO Elon Musk has mocked LiDAR technology, Tesla might use the sensors after all. Plus, there's suddenly a lot of news on the autonomous driving front. Our own Pete Bigelow talks about some of the biggest developments.
I feel like by the end of 2024, we're going to either be able to say this is happening in fits and starts, or we're just going to kind of say, aside from Waymo, this is all a lot of hooey.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
First, CEO Koji Sato drove Toyota to across-the-board record results. Now he's tapping the brakes to share the wealth. For the full fiscal year that ended March 31st, Sato's first year at the helm, Toyota booked all-time highs in global sales, production, revenue, operating profit, and net income. Operating profit nearly doubled to $35.4 billion, outstripping even the company's latest upward forecast revision from February. Net income more than doubled from the previous fiscal year, reaching a new record of $32.7 billion. Revenue jumped 21% to about $298 billion, rounding out the financial record trifecta. Now, Sato says Toyota will pull back from its red-hot expansion and reinvest its cash bonanza in suppliers, dealers, employees, and a range of next-generation technologies, from electric cars to software. Looking ahead, Sato says the company will stomach lower profits and tepid sales as it plows those bumper profits into the long game. Come back tomorrow for more on Toyota's results with Automotive News Asia editor Hans Greimel.
Rivian's first quarter net loss widened to almost $1.5 billion as revenue nearly doubled to $1.2 billion, compared with the same period last year. The automaker's net loss in the most recent quarter was 7% higher than a year earlier, while revenue surged from $661 million. The automaker reaffirmed its production target of 57,000 vehicles this year.
Same-store finance and insurance gross profit per vehicle fell at five of the top six public auto dealership groups in the first quarter compared with a year earlier. Only Group 1 Automotive saw results improve, up 3% year-over-year. Asbury's per-vehicle F&I profit fell the furthest, down 6% from 2023. The retailers pointed to high interest rates again as a major contributor to the declines. Average rates are still high in both new and used vehicle markets, continuing to strain consumers as monthly payments are also elevated.
And Tesla CEO Elon Musk has, on many occasions, mocked LiDAR, a sensor that most other automakers and technology companies say is essential for self-driving vehicles. Here's Musk at a December 2020 Tesla Autonomy Day presentation.
They're all going to dump LiDAR, that's my prediction. Mark my words. In cars, it's friggin' stupid. It's expensive and unnecessary, and once you solve vision, it's worthless.
Well, as it turns out, it looks like Tesla is now using LiDAR sensors. LiDAR supplier Luminar Technology said Tuesday that Tesla was its largest LiDAR customer in the first quarter. In fact, the company said sales to Tesla made up more than 10% of Luminar's quarterly revenue. Tesla represents a signature new customer at a time that Luminar's stock price has dwindled. Late last week, Luminar laid off 20% of its workforce and announced a corporate restructuring. And those are today's headlines. Coming up, could this be the moment that interest in self-driving technology makes a comeback? Our own Pete Bigelow joins the show to talk about it. That's next on Daily Drive.
Data is the backbone of your used vehicle department, but finding the right data and using it to build accurate comp sets can be difficult. How often do you find yourself making manual adjustments to pricing recommendations? Reynolds' newest inventory management solution, AutoVision, can help. Jose Mendoza, general manager at San Leandro Honda, explains how AutoVision sets his business apart.
Everybody's going on third-party vendor sites to see what they're priced at out there. Everybody's looking at auction data. Everybody's looking at transaction data if you can get it. So the only thing that really is going to make it different for you is what you're selling them at. So I think you have to weigh that a little bit heavier than you do everything else. It doesn't matter if the market says you can sell this car for $30,000 if the last three you've sold have been at 27. We have reports set up through our DMS, through Reynolds & Reynolds, and through AutoVision, which is what we use for our used cars. And we have reports set up in those. And it's something that I think is important to constantly be talking about and constantly be going over.
AutoVision can help you run your used vehicle department with precise comp sets, real-time inventory data, and reconditioning insights. Visit rayray.com/usedcars to find out more. That's rey.com/used-cars.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jake Neer with Kellen Walker. The feasibility of a safe, ubiquitous AV future is uncertain. That's what the Association for Computing Machinery said just last month. It was a finding from a respected and prominent organization that came just as investor interest in autonomy seemed to be at a recent low point. But there are some bright spots in the AV picture, and a lot is changing in the industry just within the past several days. Jamie spoke with our own Pete Bigelow about some of the biggest recent developments on the self-driving front.
Pete Bigelow, welcome back to Daily Drive.
Thanks, Jamie. It's been a while since I've been here, so thanks for having me back.
Maybe it's been a while to you. Of course, our listeners hear excerpts from your Shift podcast most weeks, so your voice has been on Daily Drive, but it's good to have you back to answer my direct questions. There's just been a lot going on in the world of autonomy, so I wanted you to join us and just help our audience keep track of it all.
Jamie, you're right. There's a ton going on all of a sudden. It feels like, I don't know, for like 6 to 12 months, there perhaps was less news than there usually was. Now, all of a sudden, we have, you know, Waymo expanding throughout California, Cruise struggling to refind its footing. We have Motional laying off a bunch of people yesterday and delaying its commercialization efforts. And we have this relatively new company, Wayve, out of London that just got $1 billion of funding from the likes of SoftBank, NVIDIA, Microsoft. So that kind of scratches the surface with those companies. And there's more beyond that. But yes, to your point, yeah, a lot going on.
Well, yeah, because not that long ago, I mean, after the Cruise debacle, it kind of looked like, oh, this is the end of robo-taxis. This is the end of autonomy outside of, you know, very narrow parameters. And yet it's not the end. It was just a pause. Let's start with the news about Motional. There was a story you just wrote. It's on autonews.com. Clearly a setback for the robo-taxi movement. Motional, which is backed by Hyundai, is really dialing back its plans. I mean, this was the company that seemed like, at least officially, they were on the brink of launching robo-taxi service in Las Vegas for months, right?
That's right, Jamie. And it's in a way, this almost feels like the moment that the shoe finally dropped, because we at CES, we kind of expected Motional to launch at or about that time, make a big splash in Vegas. When they were radio silent around CES in their launch city, kind of knew something was up. And then we saw the developments last week with Hyundai buying out a big share of Aptiv's investment in their joint venture, which is Motional. And then we had the news this week that Motional is really scaling back any commercialization plans and laying off an undetermined number of employees right now.
I think you'd feel like when a startup gets extra funding, especially from an original backer, you know, that the jobs are going to be safe for a while, but apparently not in this case.
Well, not in this case, because I think that they're probably spending some time recrafting their strategy right now, and they don't need people who are working on commercialization while there's not going to be commercialization for the foreseeable future. But really, well, like the big question that I have is, you know, in this particular industry, $475 million only goes so far. You know, you probably need $10 billion plus to really launch, you know, a commercialized self-driving vehicle program. So I'm not quite sure what this money buys Hyundai right now. And that's kind of more, I want to know more about where Carl Yagnema and goes with Motional right now. Do they do something like what Ford did post Argo, where they look at taking the underlying technology and building a sophisticated driver assistance system instead? That's just me speculating. Don't know that, but you know, when you really kind of look at the money being spent, is Hyundai committed to this for another couple billion dollars right now? That's the important question that needs to be asked.
Yeah, I mean, the Hyundai Chaebol has the resources. If it takes $5 billion or $10 billion, they could do it if they believe there's a sufficient return on the other end. As you noted, I mean, with Argo AI, Ford and VW are not committed to that, not committed to that vision. So yeah, that could be the case. With Hyundai's investment, you know, it looks like a positive, but the fact that they were separately or in addition buying out Aptiv, to lose a tech partner like that is not a good sign.
Right. I think Hyundai is going to go it alone, and what that looks like is up in the air. But yes, I think losing Aptiv was clearly a sign that Aptiv was not in this for the long haul. So you have one more traditional player here deciding that they're not going to go the distance. And yeah, a lot of questions remain, of course.
As you said, a traditional player, Aptiv is still a relatively new name in the auto industry, but of course it came out of Delphi, which came out of, you know, GM's AC Delco. It's like has a 100+ year legacy. So I agree that it is a well-established player, even if it's a relatively new name.
New player maybe, but old mindset.
So speaking of new names, we had to learn a new one this week, Wayve, W-A-Y-V-E. I guess, you know, they have done some fundraising before. This was a Series C, but $1 billion and from some big names.
That's right. I think Wayve had about $250, $260 million prior to this, but this is their Series C with the likes of SoftBank, NVIDIA, Microsoft as the three participants. And I think what the promise here is that Wayve has been working on an end-to-end autonomy system that is not at all rules-based, that fully relies on the embodied AI, as they would call it, to make the decisions without any sort of human rules wrapped around that. And that's kind of been a holy grail for a long time. First wave of AV companies, some of which we've just mentioned before in this podcast, were of the original approach to developing autonomy. And here you have a relatively new startup. They were founded in 2017, coming along and saying, no, we've been doing it this way the whole time. And now that there's been some, you know, more general AI advances, they think that they've kind of cracked the code where they can apply this to any driving scenarios, be that fully driverless or driver assistance systems as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. And obviously, there's been challenges in trying to, you know, write rules, write, you know, code to teach a computer how to drive, teach a car how to drive itself. But it also makes me nervous. I mean, like having a little bit of experience with ChatGPT, you know, it writes by thinking, you know, well, this word is usually followed by that word, and then people usually write this next word. And that doesn't seem like a great way to learn how to drive, but maybe it's a better way to take in all of the things that human drivers are processing at once, or is it?
I think the promise is that it is better, because then you don't have to sit around and label every scenario. It's more that the proper course of action is just inferred from what has happened many, many other times before. Of course, you know, ChatGPT is one thing. When you take artificial intelligence and apply it to a safety critical situation like driving, you know, you can't afford to be right 99.9% of the time. You really have to be right in all scenarios. And that really gets complicated, I think, when you start trying to infer the intention of pedestrians. Is this person going to step off the curb? Are they going to wait? That's been one of the hardest aspects of autonomy to solve overall is what's happening next. And you can't be, again, you can't be right only 99% of the time when you're trying to figure that out, operating in a physical world at high speeds.
Yeah. And it reminds me of, you know, automatic emergency braking, which you wrote about last week, and some of its imperfections. And I, of course, I'm blaming the primitive versions of the technology, but I can remember people, you know, driving through Detroit, where we often have steam that comes up, you know, from the street, and having cars slam on the brakes because they suddenly thought there was a person in front of them when they saw that steam. There are just so many complicated things that can be, you know, solid and fragile, like solid like a car or fragile like a human, a pedestrian, and then other things that are really inconsequential, like a bag, you know, being blown down the highway or steam rising from the street. It's a lot to process.
It is a lot to process. Yeah. And the problem with false positives is, you know, I don't want to say half the battle to solve here, but it's a substantial part of the problem that still exists, whether you're talking about automated emergency braking or driver assist systems or fully autonomous driving. Again, like a false positive can be just as problematic as a false negative. And depending on, you know, your application, if it's merely annoying or concerning, people are going to turn that system off. If you're in a robo-taxi or other, you know, other application, it's equally problematic. I'll tell you, many years ago, I was doing a autonomous driving demo on the highway on I-15 outside Vegas, and the car screeched to a halt in the middle of the interstate when there's absolutely nothing in front of us. And I was just very thankful that there was not a class 8 truck behind us or something like that. But yes, there's one area where the false positive is quite problematic.
Yeah. Well, and of course, thinking back to, you're reminding me of the early days of the robo-taxi efforts, and it was sort of like the roundabout phenomenon. There, you know, not as severe accidents, but more accidents because the computer-driven cars would stop, you know, for almost any potential obstacle, and they kept getting rear-ended by the human drivers who are used to drivers just, you know, plowing through a yellow light or darting around a pedestrian instead of stopping for them.
Yeah, it's one of those perfect instances where, you know, autonomy is supposed to be safer, but also accidents will happen in new ways. And humans adjusting to the way that the autonomous vehicles drive is one of those.
So, Pete, where do we stand overall with this whole autonomy effort? You know, I see, like you said, Waymo's expanding into LA, which is about as hard a place to drive as there is in North America. More people are using it there and being, as far as I can tell, pretty boringly delivered to their destinations. Cruise is working to get back on the road. Is this finally happening? Is it sort of happening? What's happening?
Sort of happening is probably the best way to put it. And I think without Waymo's efforts, we'd be a lot more down on the entire industry and future of autonomy, at least for the foreseeable effort or for the foreseeable time. But I mean, what Waymo's really done is extraordinary. Like you said, they've expanded through Los Angeles. They've expanded not just in San Francisco, but are driverlessly operating throughout the San Francisco Peninsula. They're in Metro Phoenix. They have plans later this year to be in Austin. So they're making it happen. Every time I read something that says that robo-taxis aren't happening and that they're years away, I'm like, well, what about this company that's already doing it at a pretty widespread scale of hundreds of cars today? So that's one end of the spectrum. And then on the other, I think you have probably Cruise struggling to regain its footing following the incident last October, where they struck a pedestrian who had already been hit by a human-driven car in San Francisco. And I think most people probably know the sketch of that, so I won't dive into it. But then you have other interesting players now, like Wave just got $1 billion. You have Amazon with its Zoox subsidiary. So very deep pockets there, and they're aiming to launch in Las Vegas by the end of this year. You have Motional, as we talked about, kind of up against the ropes. You have the whole trucking side of things, where Kodiak Robotics and Aurora have been pretty adamant that they're going to driverlessly commercially provide service in Texas by the end of this year. And here we are, pretty close to halfway through the year, maybe not quite, but you know, they have not backed off those plans. So I kind of feel like, you know, we have Elon's robotaxis, which is a whole nother podcast probably, but he says he's unveiling something on August 8th. I don't know if that's going to be, I don't expect that to be a service that's going to start on August 8th, but that's a firm date on the calendar to expect something. And then you've got the trucking operations by the end of this year. So depending on whether all that happens or not, I feel like by the end of 2024, we're going to either be able to say this is happening in fits and starts, or we're just going to kind of say, aside from Waymo, this is all a lot of hooey. You know what I meant.
It's a family podcast mostly. You know, the Waymo progress is really interesting in that, you know, a year or so ago, we were looking at, you know, crews aiming to rapidly deploy really across that Sun Belt or the Smile States, as it were. And now, you know, slowly but steadily, you know, Waymo is kind of doing it, as you just charted out, you know, from San Francisco down, heading around to Austin. You know, you're halfway there. You got half a smile going.
You do. And you know that they've tested in Atlanta and Miami, I think, or if not Miami, maybe it was Orlando. But you really do start to see that big picture. The puzzle pieces are starting to fill in. I do think a little bit, I think there's a lot of widespread concern when Cruise was busy announcing its 10th, 11th, 12th city, et cetera, before they really had things figured out. And in one city, there was concern that they were out over their skis. And I do start to wonder, you know, so far so good for Waymo, but I hope that they don't fall into that same trap.
But it is, for the foreseeable future, kind of limited to those sunshiny states. No snow, no ice, probably limited functionality in the rain for the most part. How do the Waymos do in the rain? Have you driven those then?
I've not been in one in the rain, but they have added some capabilities in San Francisco in particular. And I know in their permits for CPUC and the California Department of Motor Vehicles, there's specific language on what weather conditions they can operate in and what they can't. And obviously in San Francisco, you always have fog. So there is a minimal rain fog benchmark that they can hit. And I don't know, you know, I don't even know how you measure that. Actually, a good question that we should look into, Jamie. Like, what's the intensity of the precipitation that would force them to the curb is a good question.
Well, we know there's a lot of pieces of this to be uncovered and unraveled, and we know you're going to stay on it for the long haul. Pete Bigelow leads our team covering technology and innovation here at Automotive News. Pete, thanks so much for joining us today.
You bet, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jake Neer in for Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News journalists Hans Greimel, Lawrence Iliff, and Paige Hodder for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on the self-driving industry, earnings results, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a look at Toyota's record earnings results with Automotive News Asia editor Hans Greimel. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.